I'm going to call this podcast the Scots effect, or the Scotch effect, or the Scottish effect, but I don't know actually what is the proper terminology. Craig Robertson, what should I call it?
Anything except Scotch. Scotch is only whiskey.
Oh, I see. So the Scotch effect would be I've had drunk too much Scotch.
That is a regular occurrence. Actually, it's happening as we speak.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 404, The Scottish Effect.
Alexandra Sokolov is an old friend of Reed, Martin, and myself.
No, she's a young friend that we've known for a long time.
She's a very young friend of long standing from our days at Berkeley 85 years ago. And but she's now a writer living in Scotland. Well, she's now a writer, and she's also now living in Scotland. And here's another writer, Craig Robertson, who is also a writer, but you're a Scottish writer. So what is the difference? How does this country, this great wet country, affect how and what you write?
Well, there's your first thing is it's wet. It's raining a lot as we speak right now. So we stay indoors and we write books about killing people. You know, we can't. If it was sunny, we'd be at the beach and we'd all be happy, but we're not. We're miserable all the time. And all this angst comes out in our books and we kill people really badly and brutally.
So, because you're inside thinking of this anyway, so you might as well put it into a story.
Well, exactly. If we're going to have all these feelings, we may as well make money out of it, basically. let's not get away from it. That's what we do. We like to write. We like to be paid for it.
Well, and Alex, you've been writing crime novels and also sort of gothic romances, if I'm saying that right. That seems like... I'm surprised
not
it to
romance,
or not romances.
Really. I've written a couple of romances because a friend of mine made me.
Okay.
But really, I wrote very horror is what they called it.
Oh, okay.
And just not with a lot of gore. It's more psychological. So the gothic is the more Henry James,
right,
Shirley Jackson kind of thing.
Well, then it seems like I'm surprised you didn't move here to Scotland sooner.
Well, I was trying to, but I had to find the right guy.
Oh, got it.
I have, and it's fine.
Do you have in your books what Christopher Moore calls monster boning?
Monster boning.
That will be later.
No, but I did in terms of the supernatural sex I think you're talking about.
Yes.
Before the kill thing. I once had a protagonist have sex with the house. So, yeah, I tried to find an appropriate sex scene for the supernatural occurrences.
Was that a female or a male protagonist?
A female protagonist.
Curiouser and curiouser.
Yeah, okay.
It's the one scene that everyone writes in about, like, what was really going on in the unseen when that and she and what?
Well, and then that's my question for Craig. Was she researching this around your house?
I have to say, this is the first time I've heard of this. I'm now slightly worried. I'm feeling bad for my house. My poor house. I didn't know this was going on. But so, supernatural sex.
It's called housal abuse, I think.
Yeah.
So how did, Alex, when we were at Berkeley together, we were all in the drama department, all in the theater department. Did you know then you wanted to be a writer?
I did about the second year of school. I took a playwriting class with Dunbar Ogden, who you'll all remember fondly, and there were 125 of us in the class, and we all had to write a one-act play, and five of them were produced, and mine was one of them, and the minute those characters walked out on Durham Studio Theatre stage, it was like heroin.
Oh, cool.
I created those people and they were living apart from me, and that's when I knew I wanted to be a writer.
Interesting. Yeah. And so, was it, and prior to that, had you wanted to be an actor, or you didn't know what you...
Well, I knew I wasn't as good an actor as you and Reed. I wasn't really an actor like you guys were actors, you know. I was really more of a... I liked the big picture, and I did a lot of directing in college, too.
Yeah.
So writing was the next step to, like, controlling it all.
Cool, yes. Okay, so you had the God complex that we all kind of mildly do. And Craig, you started as a journalist, am I right?
Yeah, no, I was a journalist for, it felt like about 100 years, I think. But it was only 20, still a long time.
Still? Yeah,
so, yeah, long enough. And I started writing my first book about 4 years before I gave up journalism. And just I wanted out. Journalism was great, but journalism just isn't what it was. You know, they've taken all the fun stuff away.
Like what? How do you mean?
Well, the fun stuff was. Oh, that's okay.
You mean expense accounts?
I mean expenses. Once it took expenses away, like I need to get out of this business.
Right.
They took away 2-hour lunches where we would just go to the pub, foreign travel, all the good stuff.
Right,
they took
right.
away, and they just expected us to work. And it got to the stage they wanted me to come in on time, and that was the final straw.
Jesus.
And I said, I need to write a book, become a best-selling author, and get the hell out of here.
Which is what you did.
I'm surprised that plan worked, but it did work.
when we met 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, you said you write crime novels, are based in Glasgow, and I said, do you do for Glasgow what Ian Rankin does for Edinburgh? And then I go into the Waterstones, I see your books on the shelf. And right there on the cover, it's somebody said that exact thing.
Said exactly that. I'm probably not the only person that's been compared to Ian Rankin. Poor Ian. There must be at least 1,000 authors by now are the new Ian Rankin.
Right.
While he's still quite happily being the old one. We haven't done away with him yet. But yeah, that's been said. And it's a nice thing. If I could do half of what for Glasgow that he's done for Edinburgh, that would be quite good. But given that Glasgow is better than Edinburgh to start with, you know, I'm already halfway there. So.
Jesus, keep your voice down. We're in Edinburgh, as you speak. Come on.
Yeah, but there's no people from Edinburgh here.
Yeah, that's true. That is the point. That is the point about coming to the festival. But you were a journalist first. Were you a journalist first because you wanted to be a writer? I mean, because you liked to write?
Yeah, I think it was all part of that. I mean, I got into journalism for that reason. I'd sold some short stories to the company that I then went to become a journalist with. So it was that writing led to journalism, which led to writing. But as a journalist, you're writing every day, and without knowing it, I was kind of honing my craft over years, doing all that kind of stuff. And I loved being a journalist. It was great. But I think what I always wanted to do was to write books, and you just never quite think it's going to happen, but luckily enough, it has done.
Was there ever a point when you were writing the journalism one, because I can think of no other way to say it,
well put.
Thank you. English is my eighth language. Was there ever a point at which you wanted to create dialogue for your subjects in a journalistic piece, you know, where you wanted to veer off of what had actually happened?
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be so much easier in journalism if you could do that and basically just make the shit up.
Yeah,
you know, that would have made life so much easier. That is the great thing with books. You don't have to, but yeah, I do research. I do a lot of research. But you can do what you want. The God complex, you know, it really is true. You are messing with people's lives and it feels great. And if they annoy me, I just kill them. You know, you do that in journalism, you get into trouble. You know, I find that out the hard way.
Important safety tip, kids. Pay attention.
The first time I saw Alex in the UK, we were performing at the Lillian Bayless Theatre, and she came over to visit, and you had just written a screenplay that had sold. Mm. And so I was curious how you went from screenwriting to book writing.
Yeah, how that happened.
Well, screenwriting, as you know, Austin, is creative hell.
It's formatting.
Yeah. Really, sometimes you're just typing what really crazy executives want to say about their own lives, and it's if you have ideas of your own, it's really not the most creative job environment. They pay you a lot of money, so you ignore that for a long time. But at a certain point, I had to look at the state of the business and what I wanted to do with my life and what I wanted to say. And I realized that I wanted to try writing novels as well. So I was actually on the development project from hell. I was working for Michael Bay, who was lovely, actually.
She says horribly.
He really was. He wasn't the problem, but
he didn't look at you in slow motion from your heels up to your butt, up to your bust, like all of his movie shots?
Well, yeah, of course he did. But beyond that, he actually is a very creative talent, and he understood the script that we were supposed to write, but the rest of the people involved did not.
Okay.
And so that it was a really horrific situation after a while, and I started in just fury writing 5 minutes at a time at night after this job of a novel. And that was a ghost story called The Harrowing, a really scary ghost story about being in the dorm at Berkeley over Thanksgiving weekend and having a haunting, only I put it way out in the Midwest, you know. It was
right.
Berkeley campus in the Midwest so that it could be right. very isolated. And it was good.
Yeah.
So I sold that in a two-book deal, and then it was great because the screenwriting market was crashed at that time, and I slid right into novel writing and started making a living right away. So that was great.
Hello, I'm Graham Gardner, President of the British Society of Dowsers and host of their podcast, Adventures in Dowsing. And you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Yeah, dancer.
Where can you RSC the RSC? 8 shows, 4 months, 3 countries. That's what this fall of 2014 looks like. Next week begins our unprecedented Reston Extravaganza, the complete works of the Reduced Shakespeare Company Abridged. 7 different shows in 10 days, plus workshops, special guests, panel discussions, live podcasts, and 12 current and former members of the RSC in performances and special events. Plus, we'll have 2 weeks of performances of the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged Revised in the UK in September, performances of the complete History of Comedy Abridged across the U.S., and the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged Revised at the Wu Chen Festival in China in October, a month of performances of the complete History of Comedy Abridged at the Marin Theater Company in November and December, and performances of the Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged across the U.S. in December. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to Reed Martins and my conversation with Alexander Sokolov and Craig Robertson, where we had just reached the point where we had to ask ourselves, how do writers make a living in rapidly changing industries?
These are all industries that are crashing. Yeah, publishing, journalism, and screenwriting.
Yeah, it's
not our fault.
Well, and playwriting. Jesus, the theater. That's four.
Yeah.
We all have to figure out a way to make a living with our writing, because there isn't, as you say, the journalism model fell apart.
Absolutely.
The screenwriting model seems to have fallen apart.
It did. Well, all the good screenwriters went to TV, which is why TV is so good right now. But the screenwriting market really crashed because of a corporate change in the system. So.
Did you write a ghost story because that's what you wanted to write, or because you thought, I think that might sell?
Well, that's what I read. I wrote what I wanted to. I never write anything except what I want to be reading at the time.
You're not chasing a market.
No, of course not. But I was more thinking that it was the first novel I'd ever written. I'd never written fiction before. Screenwriting is different.
Yeah.
So I thought I could pull it off and really scare people. That's something that I do well. So
scared me at times.
Craig could attest.
Yeah, definitely scared at times. But the thing, I mean, I got into doing crime partly because it's what I read. I mean, that was my main source of reading, women crime fiction, but also, definitely because it sold. Scottish crime fiction, dragging it back on topic, crime fiction sells really well. There's a market for it. Mr. Rankin kind of set the tone, Willie McIlvany before that, and I knew that it would sell. There's no point in writing something wonderful that nobody's going to want to read. I need to eat.
Yes.
And I need to buy beer, you know, and there's important stuff. So,
But you could have been, so you're the next Ian Rankin, even though the current Ian Rankin is still there, but you're not the next Alexander McCall Smith, for instance.
I'm most definitely not. Lovely man that Sandy is, I'm not going to write the same kind of thing at all. Mine is a lot darker, more edgy. Lots of ways, actually, he said that he doesn't approve of, not of me in particular, but he thinks we're all just a bit too violent. And
who, Rankin or Smith?
Alexander McCall Smith.
Yeah,
thinks crime writers these days are just a bit too violent, and the world is much nicer than we make it out to be. I'm not so sure it's that nice.
He's a very genteel older gentleman, isn't he?
He is indeed, and we come from a slightly different place, so that's fine. But it's a broad church, and there's room for all of it.
Yeah.
And where do you come from? Because you are obviously Scottish, unless that's the most amazing put-on accent that I've ever heard.
Well, yeah, I was going to do a fake one there, pretend, but I've no idea what was actually going to come out. I'm from Stirling, so roughly halfway between Glasgow and Edinburgh.
Okay.
So an easy move to both, but I spent most of my working life in Glasgow, and that's where my books are set. So hopefully I know the place well enough to bluff that and get away with it, or they'll kill me.
And I haven't spent much time in Glasgow at all, have you, Reed?
I've spent like one. I've been at the Edinburgh Festival about 7 or 9 times, and I think I've spent a total of one evening in Glasgow.
Well, and Edinburgh feels like a college town, artsy community, lovely, historical. And Glasgow, I've told that there are places in where your life expectancy in Glasgow is age 73, and other places where your life expectancy is age 53.
It's absolutely true. It's one of the things I love about Glasgow is the contrast from top to bottom. I mean, you can't like it in real life because the bottom of expectancy rates. It's just wrong. You know, there's a lot more poverty there. Edinburgh has its poorer areas as well. I'm a big fan of Glasgow, much more than Edinburgh. It's a much more real place. We're in Edinburgh now during the festival. I'm in danger of getting lynched here, but there are no Scottish people in Edinburgh. You know, everyone's got English or American accents. Glasgow's a lot more real, and yes, it's a lot more dangerous. But that's good. We like a little bit of danger now and again.
So my question is, in your books, does your experience in journalism, does anything come directly in the books from things you reported on?
I think one of the things mostly is people. I used to get, always if something awful happened in the world, I would get sent in. So I got sent to New York after 9/11, the Omaha bombings, Dublin shootings, and I disappearance of kids. And so I dealt with people who've gone through the most horrendous things, and they would open up and speak to you. People that I'm so friends with and in touch with. And that kind of emotion, authors all just steal stuff. It's what we do constantly. You guys are the same. You steal jokes from people all the time.
So you've seen our shows.
Yeah, that's how I know. So you take all that in, you're a magpie, and you hoard it. So how people deal with horrendous things was awful for them, but useful for me, unfortunately, in the long run. So yeah, lots of stuff is coming useful.
Well, and on the same lines, have you actually been harrowed, haunted? Are these autobiographical tales of hauntings?
No, they're really not. I find supernatural experiences interesting, the way people report them. And because I have written ghost stories, everybody tells me their own experiences.
Right.
And the fact is, there's such a consistency about people's experiences. There is a ring of truth to what happens. So, no, I think I like to write the supernatural, and I like to write crime, because my big issue is good and evil. You know, what can good people do about the real evil that exists in the world? And sometimes evil is so horrific that you can only talk about it in supernatural terms, I feel. So what I do is cross crime and supernatural a lot.
Have you had personal experiences, and do you believe in it personally?
Well, I believe that we're not using all of our brains, and people who are more perceptive see more than other people. I think that the supernatural experience sometimes comes from a thin boundary thing that happens with mentally ill people. I think that mentally ill people, my experience is with people I love, is people are more psychic if they're mentally ill. Have those kinds of thin boundary issues. I get very scared in some houses. I wrote my book The Unseen in a haunted mansion, and felt things. But I can't say that I've had an out and out ghost experience. I had a really weird experience with a Ouija board when I was 16.
Who hasn't?
But yeah, you have those things. And yeah. What is that? It's just psychological. You're so keyed up about what you're doing and the raging adolescent hormones and whatever. I like to cross the lines between those things.
Well, and I think if I'm understanding you right, I agree with you, because there's many things we don't know. You know, there's a lot of things we don't know, and in those gaps between what is known and unknown, the Twilight Zone, really. You know, that's where those stories live. I agree.
I'm famously much more cynical about it. I would not read supernatural. I don't watch anything supernatural. It's just not for me. I mean, I think partly it's a journalist background. You know, you're much more cynical about everything.
Yeah.
But I think I'm maybe just a little cynical to start
just
with.
Just a little.
Just
bit.
A little.
You guys are an adorable couple. And how, or has, moving to Scotland, how has that affected your writing?
Well, my new series is going to be set half in Scotland and half in L.A., so that would be a big thing.
Where do these writers get their ideas?
It's crazy. Where did I have no idea?
Because I think I can pull off the reality of Scotland and the fantasy of Scotland, that the U.S. has fetishized Scotland in a way, and I understand.
That's why you're here.
Yeah, it's all about the fetish. So I think that I can end the whole thing about the contrast between Glasgow and Edinburgh. As an outsider, I can say, in really specific terms, Glasgow is a masculine city.
Yes, it is.
And Edinburgh is so feminine, and that's what I write about.
True.
Is the
contrast? Very true.
that makes a lot of sense. Actually,
that's why I feel so comfortable here.
Yeah.
Nestled in the Edinburgh's bosom.
The whole arty, you know, delicate thing, the architecture, you just look at the architecture of the two cities, it's such a contrast, and I'd like to make use of that.
Cool. Well, I'm actually using all the architecture in Glasgow at the moment. My new book, a book I've been working on for 4 months, I've just ditched completely and started anew.
I've got your new book.
My new book, which I'm now going to have to write in 10 weeks, but it's doable, is largely based in around architecture and Glasgow's buildings. But Glasgow buildings, don't want to keep putting Edinburgh down, but you know, it's really not very good. All right, they've got a castle.
Oh, it's beautiful.
You've got a castle, yeah.
You may have heard this, they have a castle.
So it's about architecture. Does it involve sex?
Yes. It's a lot of sex with houses.
Thank you for talking to Reed and I about Scotland, because really all I knew was that I'd seen this documentary called Brigadoon, and it was really... This was more insightful than that.
They put it on TV, but only once every 100 years, so I haven't seen it for a while.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your Scottish effects or affects via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, Irish Effect Matthew Croke, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Matt Swift. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Graham Gardner, host of the Adventures in Dowsing podcast. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener for 112ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
I cloned a sheep named Dolly, now I'm a famous Scot by golly. Soon I'll be cloning people for human parts. I'm sick from eating haggis, but I've learned how great a shag is. It gives me joy, but I'm a very bad boy. Thank you.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.